I'm John Fowler, and this is Riding the Showbiz Wave, the podcast that takes you on a journey through the highs and lows of working in the entertainment and media industries, hopefully shedding some light along the way on how you can further your own career, whatever stage you're at. Asking the perceptive questions is my old chum, Drew Masters, who brings his own insights from the other side, having been an artist, a songwriter, producer, TV and film composer, award-winning TV and film composer, I should add. I've been in the business for over four decades and have worked with platinum-selling artists, award-winning actors, writers, and therefore I'm now in a very privileged position to talk about my experiences and hopefully impart some useful information onto those who want to join in. In today's episode, we're going to start where you and I both started, really, and that's music. The music business in 2025, and especially paying attention to how to get a start.
And of course, to do that, we need to look at what the music business used to be like 30, 40 years ago. But before that, let's just have a look at how you got into the industry and some of the experiences you've had. And I guess we have to start with last Christmas.
We just celebrated 40 years of a very, very successful Christmas single and Christmas video. And those of you who don't know, I am in that video. So my first, I would say, almost professional engagement was featuring this video, as I was invited, as most of us were, as mates of George and Andrew. The situation was that when Wham split up, George took Siobhan as his PA and Andrew took me. And I was charge d'affaires, fixer, gopher. I did that for three solid years. And then when Andrew retired for the first time, I had to go out and get a proper job. So I had a couple of jobs tour managing. One tour was especially exciting. I was tour managing a support band on Michael Jackson's tour. My journey went from tour managing to engaging with the then managing director of Epic Records. He's a guy called Andy Stevens, who I regard as one of my closest friends. Everyone needs a champion. Everybody needs a mentor, although he would never admit that he mentored me, but he did. But you need a champion, you need someone to sort of get you in the door. So I was very lucky. I got my job as a marketing staffer at Sony and really responsible for international releases.
So why Riding the Showbiz Wave?
Riding the Showbiz Wave, I think it's a great title because that's literally what I've done for four decades. And my ride has been spectacularly enjoyable, fruitful, in some cases lucrative, in some cases just mesmerizingly enjoyable. You know, I hope to be able to impart a level of realism. I hope it's interesting. It might even be entertaining. Who knows?
Yeah, and I guess from my perspective, I can contextualize things with some of my experiences of being on the other side as a writer, as a producer, as an artist. I made a lot of mistakes as an artist, so I really understand how easy it is to stuff up a really great opportunity and to not understand what the opportunity is.
I have only ever been any good at looking after talent, and I have never created content, as we say. I'm not a songwriter, I'm not a player, I don't play any instruments, much to my regret, but I have a love for those people.
Play the congas.
I do play the congas, that's very true, and who knows, at the end of this series we may be able to do something. And
I think that might be our ident. Maybe a little bit of conga.
That's why you're in the creative seat, and that's where I'm sat here nodding my approval.
I should say that we're going to jump all over the place in this first episode to talk about lots of different things. If you've got specific questions about some of the things that we're talking about that you'd like us to expand on in later episodes, please do just get in touch via our socials. So where do we start talking about, you know, what's important in this industry?
People love people, though. Fans become fans of people. And God forbid I would wish Simon Cowell any more success, but in some ways, come back Simon Cowell, all is forgiven. Because at least the television talent shows gave us a story and gave us a personality. Obviously, they had the best and worst, and I have an issue with that. I'd rather it was all just the best.
And perfectly summed up by Susan Boyle.
Yeah.
Very interesting case study in a sort of Britain's Got Talent. Found artist who would never have made it in any normal world. She just didn't fit the mold of what people think of as a star. And yet she had a fantastic voice.
It was the Subo moment.
It was the backstory and the whole package that appealed to people. But they had a device, the television show, that allowed them to get all of that information across to you so that you had all of that to work with. It's basically the same thing as you doing it yourself on TikTok or YouTube or wherever. They've done it all really, really well. And cue the sad music at the right moment.
It is a pretty cynical and calculated journey. I've worked on Britain's Got Talent. I've worked on The X Factor, Pop Idol. You have to accept that it did have its merits.
It is cynical, but it worked. And of course, the artistry was genuine. So although it was cynically packaged, editing things to create a narrative is the province of TV, and that's what it does really well. And of course, you know, you buy into it as a viewer because you want that. You want to be entertained.
The manufactured pop industry has been alive and kicking for many, many years. One could argue that when Epstein got hold of the Beatles, he put them in suits, made them have a haircut. Now, that's a very extreme example. And I think that we all know now that their talent was pretty much at the forefront of everything that they did.
Yeah, it's just a form of branding, isn't it? Like the Spice Girls.
The way the Spice Girls were given a brand each was, you know, pretty simple, but awfully smart.
It's worth mentioning that you also represented Jerry Halliwell at one point as well.
I was very lucky when I worked in the management company with Andy Stevens. I was day-to-day representing Jerry Halliwell.
Who was Ginger Spice.
Ginger Spice for our friends in America. I remember going, we were in Miami in Florida, myself, Jerry, and a crew. I think it was a photo shoot. And we were having a dinner at a very posh hotel. There was a queue. We hadn't booked. I probably should have done. And I always went to the front door in the maitre. That was my job. Explain who we are. And he looked at me sort of quizzically. And Jerry, whom I love very much, pulled me and said, "Say Ginger Spice, because that's how the Americans knew her."
How interesting.
I went back and I said, "Listen, I'd have Ginger." And of course, the doors opened and we had our table for a lot of people. She was smart like that.
I know when you've been managing people day to day, you've had some pretty mundane things you've had to do. You know, it's not all
award shows and being treated like a king. And by the way, that happened very frequently. I've been lucky enough to travel all around the world, as Luther Stancer beautifully sang.
Another
client that I had a very happy time managing on behalf of Andy Stevens' management.
Of course, all of this was a long time ago, before the days of social media.
Talking of social media, I have just instructed a potential client to go away and come back in 6 months when you have 10,000 Instagram followers. I felt terrible.
That's very on you as well. Well, we've talked about this a lot of times.
I will put into a little bit of context that she is a beautiful singer, a beautiful artist. The artistry is there and she's performing. She's actually doing what she says she wants to do. So there's a lot of upside to this particular project. There is a huge hole when it comes to social media. And I've said, if you don't have that kind of window, that shop window, that's an ongoing, that's all singing, dancing, legitimately saying and authentically doing what you do, nobody's going to look at you. There's not a radio station that's going to play a track. There's not a local newspaper title that are going to be interested unless you have that. And I said, go away and get 10,000 followers in 6 months and then we can really start motoring. I felt that was the right thing to say. Beautiful and fantastic singer-songwriters may not be comfortable and confident creating social media clips. I get that. The fact of the matter is, you probably should be. If you're serious about this business, you probably should be.
Yes, and this comes up all the time with artists I work with. It's really simple in my mind. You just have to find a way to do it that's authentic to you. And finding that authenticity surely is the same as finding your own artistic voice. You know who you are. You know what you want to share with the world. It doesn't have to be the same as everyone else. You don't have to share your impending breakdown or some personal tragedy. You just simply have to connect with your audience. I was trying to think about how the Gallagher brothers would use social media and how they would have used it specifically when they were starting out. There was a lot of mystique around them. They're quite sort of aloof.
Well, completely unapproachable.
And actually, the reason I was just laughing is because I was just remembering that thing where Noel put the thing on, I think it was on Twitter, where he said, ask me anything. And Liam replied with, why are you such
I don't. I mean, I can't.
I might bleep that later. Or I might not.
I cannot imagine them relating to social media. I think Liam is quite vocal on it.
How much does it matter having someone there for you day to day and mentoring you, managing you?
It is helpful. Sadly, it's not available to everybody. You know, I have a big problem with the lack of regionality of the business that we are involved in. It does always seem to be focused in the southeast, and
it can move around, but you're right. I mean, I see people on TikTok all the time advising people to move to London, not necessarily saying you have to move to London or you won't make it, but saying if you want to make it, you've got a much better chance if you move to
London. There are hotbeds of creativity in everywhere in this fantastic nation, especially, I mean, goodness me, Scottish bands, one of my favourite specialist subjects. The Madchester era, not one of my favourite parts of the business, but you can't avoid it. I mean, New Order are probably one of my favourite bands ever. But
Factory Records deserve an episode on that their own. I mean, they're an incredible force. And, you know, the Hacienda Club, which was a sort of extension of that, it was a really amazing time. And I mean, something that could easily be replicated, but it takes that personality. You know, you had Anthony Wilson, who was just a visionary and in the right place at the right time. But it's not something that you look at and go, that could never happen again.
Well, it's such a fascinating area. For a start, we talk about social media and we talk about how important it is to have a presence, have your shop window open and functioning, looking great. But I am a huge believer that a lot of the fantastic bands and sounds and cultural impact happened through nightclubs, through gatherings. And 90s was such a huge time for super clubs and, of course, super DJs. DJs were the anonymous bloke normally behind the decks. And then from late 80s, 90s, the superstar DJ ruled the world. People love people. People want to see people, not just product. And that's why, unfortunately, you have to be interesting. And
well, actually, you know what? I've noticed that it's coming through in everything we're talking about. It's all about the personality. And in a world where there are a lot of personalities, all getting a lot of airtime, making a lot of noise, you have to cut through that. You have to be able to get seen. Well, of course, you worked with one of my favourite bands from Wales, which is, I don't know if they were from Wales, but they were certainly Welsh, which is Manic Street Preachers.
They were absolutely from Wales. And I think if they heard you suggest, they may not have... They were absolutely and are still, as far as I'm aware, still living and breathing in Wales. They were a phenomenal band to work with. Not the easiest of repertoires to really get on with. In fact, they were sort of ahead of their time, as much as they were sort of post-punk, but a great rock band with really deep and meaningful lyrics, some of which, you know, were not easy for radio, and they had great press. They had a fantastic publicist, Terry Hall. She was just fantastic.
Not to be confused with Terry Hall,
who is now no longer with us.
That's just lead terribly sad.
Yeah.
Loved the
very special. Sad.
And Fun Boy 3, fantastic.
I'm pretty sure that Terry, the Manics publicist, did. But she drove a lot of their success, as indeed the band themselves. They were brilliant, quite brilliant.
Small side story, which you'll remember because you very kindly got me the 12-inch versions of these when they came out. I, back in sort of, must have been 1990, very early 90s certainly, I did a remix of
Roses
in the Hospital. I can't believe you can remember that.
I do remember that.
Which they played at the opening of their gigs for a long time.
Yeah.
And it was had a little quote from Electric Blue. By Bowie, and it's interesting because this is again a different conversation, but it's really interesting that you don't always know what it is you're doing or a part of when you do it. So I was doing remixes of tracks in the early 90s, sort of dance remixes. It was really the start of the remix era, and I had no idea.
So fast forward from the 90s to the last 5 years, and across all the industries I've worked in, there is a theme, and certainly in terms of books and young writers, certainly non-fiction writers, the spectre of social media is very relevant. Publishers will want to see that there's a level of popularity, there's a level of notoriety about that which you're writing. I spent a lot of time with young writers, and how they develop and how they get the break is very important.
And of course, also you've got film deals for writers.
Look, I've done a lot of deals. The deals themselves can be quite complex, but it's how you go about getting the foot in the door. You know, the deal is the end game. And that's really the dull bit. The exciting bit is actually trying to get the deal. And there are very specialist agents, books to film or books to screen agents out there. And as part of the development of the business, it's more complex and it's more sophisticated. And if you are a young scriptwriter and you have the best script that's ever been written, there are people to represent you.
In another episode, we should talk in more detail about how you go about getting the right agent for your discipline.
One of the most important parts of my career has been my relationship with PR and publicity. I believe it's very important. I've worked essentially with heavily PR-driven activity, not necessarily through choice, but it just has become such an important part of anything that we do in this business.
And I take it there are two sides to that coin, good PR and bad PR.
Yes, there's one thing that I've noticed probably, I don't know, last 10, maybe more years, is the apology syndrome that impacts on a lot of people. I first saw it, I recall, do you remember Tiger Woods, the golfer?
Oh, yes.
Had an annus horribilis and couldn't help, he was in all sorts of trouble, morally, contractually, and he wasn't playing great golf, it's fair to say. I won't detail his undoing.
Fall from grace.
Fall from grace. But I remember him being paraded out to make what was just a huge apology. And when I think back, the reason there was so much money that was circulating around Brand Tiger, he would have had agents, he would have had brands, and they were in danger of losing the lot. I can imagine a meeting and they said, right, we've got to do something to arrest this decline. And I remember his apology, and I think he looked absolutely awful. He completely out of it. He was on meds, and he just rambled on this huge apology to everybody. And then it's happened again. You see it a lot. If someone trips up and that seems to be enough, say sorry and then you'll keep your job.
Or in the case of Greg Wallace, say sorry, but blame everyone else.
Well, the Greg Wallace thing, I mean, I think we can talk about specifics at the end of our series. I think that might be fun to do a, you know, blow-ups, f-ups kind of 20 minutes. And
There are plenty of those.
And there are plenty of those. We can think of big, big, highly successful pop stars who, you know, have done some very crazy things.
I just want to talk about some practical things for people who are listening who, you know, maybe want something that they can really take away from this. Let's say you're a young artist and you're starting out and you're approaching an agent, manager, a label, publisher, or even a tour manager. If you're going to email them, I think I'm right in saying that you should never send an attachment. You should never send maybe a photo, but
great advice, you know.
But ideally send a link to your website if you have one, and probably your SoundCloud page or something like that, so that people can hear what you do.
But again, don't overdo it. You know, these people do not want to read more than the paragraph and see, click on one link.
Yeah, I mean, talking of things not to do, I get sent a lot of stuff that relates to what I do, writing music for TV, and people will send me a link to their SoundCloud page with a bunch of examples of things they've done. The first thing I do is I look and I see, when do they upload those tracks? And a lot of the time it's very telling. You know, there might be 10 tracks there, some of them over a year old. That tells me a lot. It tells me that they're not doing a lot of work that they're proud of that they've done recently, or it tells me that they're lazy about updating it. There's something. And I will listen through the tracks. I am brutal when I listen to stuff. I will listen to the opening if it comes in fairly quickly. If it drifts in and it's pretty ambient, I'm going to click to where the waveform looks like it's bigger. It's one of the great things about things like SoundCloud, where you can actually see the waveform. I will give it 5 seconds and then I will move on to another section. I might spend 10 to 15 seconds on a track. I'm not going to listen to a minute or 3 minutes of a track, even if it's really good. And
but this is super, super important. And for any young songwriter, singer, songwriter, band who want to get into the business, as you say, you actually, you know, get to the point quickly, whether it's musically, creatively, or even in the email. What do you want? What do you sound like? What do you look like? That kind of thing. And you actually analyze the sound waves on your track.
On the tracks you're sending.
Get to the point quicker. That is brutal.
Yeah, it is brutal. But what time have I got? You know, I'm working, I'm busy, and I haven't got time to sit and listen to your showreel, nor do I really want to. I'm not that interested. I want to know, are you any good? My advice would be, it's really useful to think before you write to someone about what it is you actually want from them. And it might seem obvious.
Not at all.
But so often...
The objective, you want to play more live gigs? Write to a live agent.
I've had so many people over the years say, can I have a coffee with you? And I'll go and have a coffee with them. Give up, you know, an hour of my valuable time, probably an hour and a half, because I'm terrible at calling time on coffees. And at the end of it, I won't have any idea what they wanted from that meeting.
This is really important. This is really important for the process. Whether you're starting out or just getting ahead of steam.
They know you want something. Ask them, you know what it is you want from them. Because it's actually just really frustrating to me if I go and spend an hour with someone and they go away and I just literally don't know if I helped them. I didn't really offer them anything because I didn't know what they want. I've just wasted an hour of my time. I'd rather they ask me outright, can I come and work for you? Can I assist you? Can I work on some projects with you? The answer is probably no, but I'd much rather know what they want, because also at some point I might want someone to do that and I might say yes.
And I think this is a really important point. Being a mentor and being mentored is exactly that. A mentor will actually advise you on what your takeaway should be. If you're getting a meeting with someone, if you're writing to someone, you know, as a mentor, I would advise you, do your homework, know who they are, know what they do, because if they're representing people in a very different area of the business, don't bother. Identify people who represent type of band that you're like, the type of performer that you are. And these people exist. They really do. Specialized agents do exist. And that information is definitely out there. So as part of my mentoring, I would sit someone down and say, right, what do you really want to achieve? And, you know, which area are we going for here? Now, to be fair, they may not know. And I understand that. And that's okay. But you've got to know sooner or later. You've got to know sooner rather than later, because you want to go down. Don't make the mistake earlier on.
It's very easy to watch people on telly, listen to people on the radio, whatever it is, and go, I could do that. So easy. I can see what they do. It's really straightforward. I think a lot of people are actually a little bit deluded about what goes into actually being that person and how talented you have to be. And you don't always see it. And sometimes, you know, the talent is kind of hidden from the outward presentation.
And that's how it should be, in a way. I know that sounds...
No, I think that's right.
But, you know, I go back to my absolute defining belief that talent comes first. And the question is, well, how do you recognize talent? I don't know how to answer that other than to say, you just know, and it will scream at you, and it will shout at you, and a whole combination of things, right? But genuinely, talent and the cream will rise to the top.
What should people do if they feel they're at the stage where, you know, they're ready to talk to someone like you? You know, how do they get in touch?
Check out the website, jfmediamentor.com, and we can chat. And I can tell you in greater detail how to go about attempting to get 10,000 followers in 6 months. You've been listening to Riding the Showbiz Wave with me, John Fowler.
And me, Drew Masters.
Tune in next time for more reminiscing, more celebrity stories, and more tips on how to help your own career.